All right, is everybody ready? Kevin, I don't see him online. Okay,
I'm going to
good.
try to
Yeah,
get
he's
in a
going to be
lot of
online.
books while Kevin's not here.
This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back to Indie Comic Noise, everybody. Indie Comic Noise. Yes, we're back. And we've, taken over. We have some updates. This will be hopefully episode 603. We've taken back over the website.
We're
going to
have two episodes a week now. Is
we
that
control
right?
The vertical. We control the horizontal.
So right now, hopefully by the time this airs, we're back on and back on iTunes and everything. But for at a minimum, we will have the website going. You can always get the episodes there. We are fully on board. Indie Comic Noise was part of Derek Coward's Deliberate Noise Network. We spun off. So it's us, the Marvel Noise guys, now doing indie, where we just talk about everything indie comics and spinoffs and shows and whatever suits our faction.
Was there creative differences? Why did we split off?
Well, Derek wound down the network, so
all right,
the individual shows went to their own corners.
Pulled the plug, you mean?
Yeah. Well, that's one way of phrasing it. I guess I like to think he was. It's a lot. As someone who's now working with just two shows, I don't know how he did all the things he did to keep all the shows going. But we have our
two shows.
And Marvel Noise is the other show. You can see that at marvelnoise.com. That one, the iTunes should be working. We also are on Blue Sky, Facebook. You can contact us. There is the website, like I mentioned. We're right now, hey, if you got questions or concerns or whatever, this is the new Genesis. We are sort of continuing our lineage, but we're up for however this goes. I may even now openly talk about DC Comics instead of slipping it in.
Oh my gosh.
How evil I used to do. And
we got to get like a little bell that we can ring.
Well, now we can talk about Derek's rules no longer restrict us. So we're free. We have three of our hosts today.
You mean we can swear? Can we swear now?
Well, as you heard from the warning at the beginning, we do have, some crass possible language because adult themes are part of indie comics. So.
And
so,
Savage Dragon.
Yeah, that's true.
Savage
every few,
Dragon
every few months, we got to catch up with Savage Dragon. If an issue comes out in the few months, right? So Derek gets to warn us still every episode, but we just don't have to listen, right?
Well, he's warning the listeners, not us.
Oh,
we
that's true.
Presumably we know what's going on. But we have, Kevin is off globetrotting, but we still have the Ottawa up in the nation's capital. Say hi, Phil.
I have to pay a tariff just to talk to you guys.
And from the comic book bunker, superstar Steve Raker. Say hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
And yeah, so this is it. We're back. The guys are back for what should be episode 603. I'm just kind of nervous. I don't know. It's so weird running the show now that I don't know. There's no adults anymore.
You got this. You got this.
It's just us. That's scary. Don't we need supervision, Steve? Who's watching us?
Kevin. Isn't Kevin the responsible one?
Oh, my gosh. For gosh sakes.
It'll become the Valiant podcast.
Let's show Kevin how an episode should really go.
Whoa. You don't want some weird, out-of-date news to talk about, Steve?
we'll name the books we're talking about. We'll do all the standard stuff.
With publishers and everything? How about that?
Hey, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
All right, Steve, you want to start us off?
All right, I got one. it came out last year, and it was the third of three issues. Three issues, you say? That's an odd number of issues. Well, not from Distillery, right? Oh, they have those old, big, oversized honking issues that are priced pretty relative to being oversized issues, but often three issues and then a trade or a collection is how they kind of have a bunch of their series published. And this one was by writer Joe Henderson with art by Lee Garbett, which is what caught my eye, as well as the subject matter, because it's called The Big Burn. And I might have mentioned it when the first issue came out, but now that it's concluded, I can look at it in its totality and tell you that.
Do they collect those? I have Soma and White Boat, but I don't have... do they, when they're finished, put them in a big form, Steve, or you don't know?
They do collect them, yes.
Okay, because I have the floppies. I mean, they're huge, like you say, so...
The White Boat floppies only, three only just came out, like, last week, finally, after all this time. So that's kind of weird. I mean, it took a long time to get that last issue. I think Frank Avila takes his time with this stuff. But anyway, the deal with the Big Burn is there's this guy who is so slick that he can pull off like any heist with his crew, right? He's just, they're like a Swiss watch, an oiled machine. And he retires after one last job, right? But ends up in a confrontation with Satan. And to save his soul, he's got to pull off a heist in hell. And the devil knows he's coming. So it's kind of stacked against him. But this guy's so good, right? And he could pull off any job. So now it's kind of like, let's see. So he's got to assemble his crew and try to get them to buy in to this caper. And then come up with and try to execute a plan to operate in, you know, in a completely unknown lethal environment. So lethal, you got to die just to get there, to start the job. It's really interesting. It's well-paced, and, you know, Garbett, it's well-drawn. It's the perfect kind of book for Distillery. The Big Burn.
Yeah, no one wants to get recruited for that job, Steve.
I never come across Distillery comics. I gotta see if there's some trades I can order.
I think I did on that first when it was... when they first dropped, and then, like I said, Soma was pretty early on, and White Boat was too, at least the first few issues. And then I think they kind of, I don't know if they paused or my shop just stopped carrying them or what.
It was White Boat. I was thinking of that other boat book, but that was from a different company, like a Blaze or something, or Ahoy.
Yeah. This was, because the size does make them stand out, but at my shop, they rack all that stuff oftentimes in a separate section if it's oversized or not regular size. So I have to go check the other spot. Well, I wanted to do a typical, just a super quick, man, it's a shame Kevin isn't here because I need to talk about Fan Expo Special Edition. And now... Fan Expo, you're thinking, wait, that's Kevin's turf up in Canada, but
right,
they have so many shows. What happened was they decided to do a special edition here in Anaheim. Now, what was strange about it was the same weekend as VidCon, which is a much larger show. So while it was in the Anaheim Convention Center, which hosts WonderCon and other large shows, they only had one section of it. And they were the baby show. So all the banners and everything that hang up and all that stuff is for VidCon. All the VidCon people were allowed to go in the front. They had to shuttle us all the way around to the side. Wow. If you didn't have a VidCon badge, it really felt second class citizen. It was... Fan Expo is big autograph show, which is fine. They were smart. Well, they only had one hall. They put all that autograph and photo stuff on the bottom in, like, the basement part. So it was, I went down just to watch, but it was smart because they had Mark Hamill and a few other high names. So all those crowds and all that, I never interacted with them, except when I went down just to be a looky-loo. But it wasn't like they were, I always felt bad when you know, there'd be some long line and be blocking some guy's, you know, homemade comic table or whatever. Right. And it's all the people standing in line to get
That's how I met Al Jaffe. I met Al Jaffe because Chris Campbell was in line for Kevin Eastman at a show. And it was a really long line, and he had never met Kevin Eastman, and he's a big Turtle fan, and he really wanted to get a sketch in his book, so he was waiting patiently, and he didn't care how long it took, and it was taking a while, and I kept making laps and coming back and chatting with him, like he's a little watering hole or something to come back to, and the line was so long and blocking off. I'm realizing as we're standing there that like this line is totally blocking off Al Jaffe. And nobody even knows he's there. And I'm like, holy cow, it's Al Jaffe. And got to chat with him for a little bit. That was cool.
Yeah, so I think it was smart for that. Also, the panel floors were on the floor. I mean, there was a huge, for somebody like Mark Hamill, they had a huge separate thing. But for most of the, you know, like the voice actors for the Transformers and G.I. Joe and that stuff, they would just be on the floor, which is kind of nice if you just want to, you know, you don't want to go off somewhere. You
wouldn't
just
that be hard to hear?
They did a pretty good job of making them sort of enclosed. So you had to, if you were sitting up close by them, I think you could hear better. But it was harder if you were just kind of walking by. You had to really focus. But they also put all that stuff up on a little screen behind them too, which helps because you can kind of read their lips a bit better. So, but I was... for me, it was a good half day. It was one of those kind of neither fish nor fowl, a great show for a new person because, you know, oh, there's a little bit of gaming. There's a little bit of cutesy crafts. There's a little bit of comics. There's a little bit of, Art and Sally was a pretty good size. They had some good names.
There's $30 pizza slices.
Yeah. The Greg Capullo line was the one that was really big. And it was so funny because that one kind of blocked off Mitch Gerard, who used to have the long lines. It's funny how you go from having the crazy lines if you're on the hot book to, you know, being busy but not having those lines.
And what was his hot book?
He was, a couple years ago, he did some of the new DC stuff when it was coming out. But I met him a million years ago when it was just, he had just done the Activity, which was a military book for Image.
Mitch?
So he was like, yeah.
He was with Tom King on a couple of books, and that made him
launch him up.
Yep.
But when it was just the Activity, it was not like that. Fables Con was a really short show, and he could run up. And the big get for me was Simon Bisley was there.
Oh, that's fun. He's a good character.
I spent all morning going through. I found, no lie, 6 different trades of Slain. I could not find the Horn God. I didn't even know there were more than like 4 or 5 trades of it. So I was like, well, if I find it at the show, I'll buy a copy. But there was it wasn't that kind of show. You weren't finding those sorts. For those of you unaware, Slain is 2000 AD character from Simon Bisley and Pat Mills, a bunch of other artists too. But the most famous story is probably the Horn God, which is the one Simon Bisley did. But unfortunately, I have loads of them, and I'm like, none of these were the Horn. It was just one of those funny Andy moments where you're like, how do I have this much Slain, and I don't have the Horn God anywhere I can find it?
I did a cool Kickstarter a couple of years ago for like an oversized artist edition-sized hardcover of a reprint of a book called Thicker Than Blood, which was a werewolf book that Mike Plug did the pencils for, and then Bisley painted over. And so on every page on the left side of the, you got a page of Plug's artwork. And then on the right side, you got it with Bisley's paints over it through the whole thing. It was, I had never seen the book before. So it was pretty fun to check out for the first time in that kind of a format.
Yeah. I mean, he had several prints, but it was mostly Lobo and I think it was TMNT one, just stuff that's fine, but wasn't my jam. Like I was like, oh, maybe I'll have a print of some of his 2000 AD work or something more that I would have responded to. I flirted with getting a sketch cover, but I was like, eh, it's a lot of the artists I've talked to don't really love those sketch the material it's on and everything. And I was like, yeah, I didn't really want to spend all, like, if that's the only thing, then you're just waiting on that. Because I was like, it's not a full day show. In fact, the only thing I bought was from my local comic shop at a stand there. Nice. I ended up buying something from him, which is, and he just laughed at me. He's like, you know, you could have just got this. I was like, well, I got to buy something at the store. And I'm trying to cut back on toys because they had a $10 Speedball Marvel Legend that I almost broke.
Should have got it. You should have got it.
I'm really getting off the 6 inchers, Phil. It's too boku for me. I'm going for the tiny guys. But yeah, it was a, like I said, fun show for there's a booth of Loungefly, a couple with funny dice, and you know all the. But it's such a small show. I mean, it's not like a hotel show, but it's not like WonderCon or any of the other ones. That's why it was kind of a weird one for me. And what was funny is NostalgiaCon was just there, I guess, the week before or 2 weeks before, the same location. And that's the same kind of thing. A lot of autographs, you know. But I think people had fun. I don't know. I had a good time. I would go again. But it wasn't a full day, and there was no way I was going to do 2.5 days. But, hey, if there's some autograph you want, particularly an older guy like Mark Hamill, get it now. Like, don't F around. We did pay for Carrie Fisher, and that is no longer an option. So if there is somebody you're kind of curious about, I would say do it. And it's a fun experience to do it once, to go through the whole meat grinder that is one of those professional signing or photograph things. I also went through a photograph thing that someone gave me one because they couldn't make it to the show years ago. So I got the experience of what that whole business is like. It's kind of crazy. But it's fun. It's fun to try different crap too. So Fan Expo Special Edition Anaheim. We'll see if anything happens. But it also stinks being at a show where you're the looked down upon group and the VidCon are all the celebrities and you're nobody. Get in the back, you. Yeah, I mean, walk all the way. There's a whole section. There's hotels on the front part and they line food trucks. So we had to walk all the way past all around the food trucks. Because we couldn't cut in front of it. I mean, they did. And their defense, the security did let. It was a cosplayer, a Zatanna, in a wheelchair being pushed by a Black Canary. And they let those two cut across. Because, you know, I mean, the chick's in a wheelchair. Like, you know, that's not very cool.
Those food trucks were not there for you. Those were for VidCon. VidCon people.
I would be really upset if I was one of those food truck people. Because we couldn't shop that, you know, unless you had a VidCon badge. They had a few at the very
end. To that. Oh my gosh, hilarious.
So you couldn't even shop at them. And I'm like, I don't know. When WonderCon has that, all that area is open. Like, they put the security after the food trucks. They also open up the area in the front. Because the other thing I missed was, I do like having all the cosplayers out front posing and taking photos. And it makes a fun atmosphere. And that stuff, they kind of shut down because all that area was for VidCon people. So it was just a weird to be at that space, but have it much more restricted. I mean, and I don't dress up. I don't have anything against it. So I don't want, because people always ask, oh, what do you dress up as? And I don't have the skill, talent, or energy to do any of that stuff. I like it at the shows.
I don't even dress format, up.
You're going to have to start doing cosplay for the podcast, okay?
Maybe I'm cosplaying now then, Phil. I'm cosplaying as depressed middle-aged man.
Grumpy old man.
Yeah. Got any books, Phil?
Yeah, I got, well, two recommends just to pick up. One of them is there's a very popular book series. I think there's like 8 books so far called Dungeon Crawler Carl. And my friend's been bugging me to read the books, but
same. My sister said the audiobooks are the way to go. They're really funny and done really well with extra production and everything.
I like. Yeah, my sister was like getting me. It cuts into comic time, right? So I don't tend to read them as much. But then they came out with a graphic novel, like kind of manga sized, and I fell in love with it right away. Basically, it's this guy. He breaks up with his girlfriend. And he still has her cat, and she's coming back to get it at some point or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, when the aliens show up and they're like, oh, we had something in the basement kind of thing.
Yep.
Saying that your planet was going to be destroyed. Well, it was kind of like that, like these aliens kind of show up, and all of a sudden now the most of the people on Earth were killed, and the surviving ones are in like this, basically like Squid Games type thing, you know, almost where they have to get all through all these dungeon floors. And it's just a lot of fun. Like as they go, so the cat and the guy are like their partners kind of, and the cat ends up getting something so it can talk to them. And instead of making it like the normal way where they're just at each other's throats the whole time, they actually, they're not like that. So it's really nice kind of thing. Like they actually do love each other, this cat and guy, even though there's the bad memories, I guess, or whatever. And it's just them. They keep getting these loot boxes, and it's just fun to see what they get. Or Dungeon Crawler Carl, Carl has a lot of bad luck where, like, one of the things he got is he can't wear pants. Or he's less powerful, like it'll make him weaker, like things like that. The cat is super powerful with some stuff she got, but like one hit and she can die kind of thing. Very glass house. But yeah, it's a high recommend for me. The next book comes out in September, I think it is. And they're done by Webtoon, so you can read them for free on there, I think, the two seasons so far.
Oh, I'll see if I can get a link and throw it up on the website.
Yeah, I recommend the little books, though, because I think it's just, it's a nice thick book, a lot of story, and it's, you know, it's not that much or anything, right? And then the other thing is Final Space, the final chapter by Olan Rogers. Final Space was a cartoon that went for three seasons, but Paramount and Discovery, when they merged, destroyed a lot of good things, you know?
Yeah.
Things that were finished but never came out, and he was one of the ones that got screwed over, and he wasn't allowed to finish it in any other way, but he did convince them to let him do a comic book to finish it off. So it took a few years, finally came out. If you're going to get it, I'd say act fast, because it's never going to be reprinted or made again. It is expensive, like $125 American. I paid $180 Canadian, and it's like 500 something pages, so that's a lot of money, but it is, you know, if you love that cartoon series as much as I did, it's a must get for you because it finishes the story. And he did such a good job on the book. Like, it's really beautiful from front cover to back cover, you know. I haven't read it yet. I'm saving it. I have a Cottage Weekend board game thing going on this weekend, so I'm bringing it for that, for my reading material. But yeah, if you want, I know I saw some on Amazon. I don't know if they're still there, but if not, they're probably all gone.
Wild.
Because it's... Yeah.
I'll try and look for some links or stuff too.
Yeah.
I'll see what I can put in the show notes for people. But
Dungeon Crawler Carl will be very easy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's,
it's so popular.
It's, yeah. My sister was on me about getting into that.
Yeah. It's, and there's a lot of books, 8 books. So, the final chapter is still on Amazon. So there's still a chance. So, because I don't know if a lot of people knew about after all this time has passed, you know, so. So there's definitely some copies out there still, but it's expensive.
And at least if you're going to invest that much, at least, like you said, the high production value, when you got it, you're like, oh, he did a great job on this.
Yeah. And there's going to be some Final Space fan out there. I want that book, but I can't get anywhere, and they'll pay heavy price, you know, so there's going to be some good resale value probably on this too. Or Final Space is going to be forgotten forever because it was erased from reality. I do. I am lucky enough. I got a custom DVD made of the series, and you can watch it legally right now on Internet Archive for free, but I don't know how that works or anything, so I don't know if that's up there forever or what, but...
Interesting.
We do not opine on the legality of getting things on the internet. We have no, that might be a Canada-only thing, but there are brave people out there trying to rescue lost media, so...
Mm-hmm.
Be surprised. Well, I was shocked at the show. I saw a lot of the DVD guys were back. Remember, they used to have all like the the Roger Corman Fantastic Four and all the cartoon, and because those guys were gone for a while, but I feel like suddenly they're back because, you know, you got to be a little careful.
Well, I feel like there's a lot of physical media collectors these days. You know, like lot of the young kids are into it these days too.
Why not? I don't blame anybody. I used to love walking into the, never really bought a ton of it, but it was always fun looking and seeing, oh my God, look, it's the old 60s Spider-Man show and stuff like that. Yeah. And Dinah Girl and all that stuff.
And I do have a lot of stuff that's been lost to time and will never be on streaming services and stuff. So I think it is worth picking up stuff that's.
Oh, for sure. If you love it, you'll get it because you'll never know when you'll see it again or whatever.
Or if they'll change it, like Community, that TV show, they edit it so it's all different. You know,
well, so sometimes the
DVD copy.
At a minimum, also music rights, so they might just have to strip out, replace
that too. Like Wonder Years did that, had that, didn't it? One of the DVD copies, they cut out all the music, I think.
Because I think that was, I think they might have finally did it, but that was what was holding up China Beach, was it? That was a whole drama that they were just because of the shift in how music works, they were not able to release it, or they finally did it in a different way, but. You could perhaps find copies of it in the world, Phil. Again, not opining on the morality or legality of such, but it's fun to see.
Well, that's the only way to get it, you know. Yeah.
I'd be happy to pay for it if it was available.
Exactly.
I talked about hell before with the Big Burn, and now I get to rise up to heaven for this book.
Spawn?
That does cover the bait. Check the boxes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I read 2 4-issue miniseries, one from 2022, one from 2023, both by Sergio Aragonés and Mark Evanier. They're the Gru miniseries from 22 and 23. And the first is Gods Against Gru, which has 4 issues of... like the prayers and curses of those that Gru has crossed paths with in the past has basically elevated Gru to godhood, which totally gives Sergio the opportunity to like render his pantheon of gods with all their ornamental jewelry and accessories and stuff as only Sergio could whip up, you know? And of course, Gru wears out his welcome in the heavens pretty quickly, and then the gods have to figure out how to like get rid of this guy. And then there's also a side story thing, a parallel story going on with the minstrel and his daughter, and Captain Ajax is there, and the sage, and of course a bunch of glorious boats for Gru to sink. Very great, fun series. And then the next chronological miniseries the next year in 23 was Gru in the Wild, which has Gru and Roberto wandering town to town looking for a meal, but his reputation precedes him and the king of the territory sends an army after him, but so that like morale isn't destroyed, the army isn't told that they're after Gru, and this dynamic like repeats itself a few times. Then the army eventually goes AWOL and the king has to command villager conscripts, including accidentally Gru himself. So Gru's in the army that's hunting for Gru. It's, hilarity ensues and army after army. So in the other Gods Against Gru, we got to see Sergio do all of like the ornamental god beings and all of their accoutrements and stuff. And here we get like him doing big giant armies, splash pages of armies left and right. Great stuff. Sergio is a true master. Never get tired of looking at his stuff.
You didn't read the last issue of Savage Dragon? Are you up to date on that?
I might be one or two back.
It was okay. I'll wait then.
Maybe just one. No, I don't mind a spoiler. It breaks inertia.
No, it'd be I'd be telling you the whole point of the comic. Yeah, so I'll wait till you read it.
Is Mr. Glum back?
No, it's not good stuff. I want to say.
Vaginas?
It's the issue where the team's coming back from Russia, kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, boy. But it's like the last page or whatever kind of thing.
All
right. I hate to do this, but I did get caught up on the Energon universe. So I'll try and cover this somewhat quickly. But I know Phil had expressed some interest in perhaps jumping on the Transformers bandwagon. So
I wonder if they'll do like movies based on these comic versions, maybe just because it's so popular.
I would think they're toying with that because I know originally a long time ago they wanted to have a whole Hasbro verse with ROM and this and that and the third thing. And certainly one of the Transformer movies, or was it the G.I. Joe, ended with a Transformers bite or vice versa. But this is years ago, and I don't, you know, the company's been through some changes and everything.
That's
since
some news. The new G.I. Joe.
Oh, yeah, the Danny McBride.
Yeah, real one.
I'm still not holding any breaths for, been plenty of false starts and everything and waiting till some of the different regulatory approvals. But
his
still
concept, though, excited me because as someone who's not a G.I. Joe fan, just because I like seeing that story, and I think Avengers did it or something, but where they're in like a town, and it ends up being all Cobra people as the townspeople, you know? Like that's what the story is, I think, for the movie.
That's the old Springfield.
Yeah.
Plus, he's got the skills, I think, to, you know, he has an established track record, and he seems to be appreciative of the material, which is all you can ask, really, is a guy taking it seriously and likes the property and has established he can make stuff before. But
I just thought Kirkman might want to jump into that, you know, and start.
Well, I think that's why the Void Rivals title, which is one of the now four in the Energon universe, was so key, because that's all 75% Kirkman created. He created a new two characters. It's a Romeo and Juliet style with two warring factions, and they're linked to the Transformers because there's I was trying to think of a quick way to say it, but basically they're now going to team up. The two different sides on this planet who were traditional enemies are now teaming up together because they've been invaded by the Quintessons, who were from the Transformers movie. My problem is my Transformer lore is pretty weak, but the sort of through thread of all four titles is the magic of Energon. Energon is the magical energy source, so it powers some creatures. The Transformers need it to live. It powers the weapons in the G.I. Joe world. It powers some of the Void Rival weapons. So it's kind of a useful thing, and because it doesn't really exist, they can decide how much of it or how little of it's always available. But that's the through line. So where we leave off in Void Rivals is the planet has been invaded, and our two heroes have left the planet in under the control of these evil Quintessons. They were the creatures from the movie that had multiple faces. They were like these robot guys, and one face would
turn.
Cartoon
movie or the live actions?
The cartoon movie.
Okay.
Would turn to the next face and would turn to the next face, and they've taken over. And so our heroes have left to go recruit some Transformers to come back and kick them off the planet. So that's where they're at in this space. They've also tied it in because in the G.I. Joe, this G.I. Joe continuity, there is a secret race of creatures who have organic technology. This is from the G.I. Joe cartoon movie, the Cobra Law people, and they don't like metal and robots, so it's kind of interesting. They're natural enemies, you would think, and they also are after the Energon and everything, so that's the through line that ties all these. I will say in the Transformers country, where we're at now is on their home planet of Cybertron, there are two basic factions, Autobots and Decepticons. Autobots, good guys. From the name, you'll guess Decepticons are the bad guys. A lot of this initial continuity was created by Marvel Comics, but it's so complicated, I'm just going to keep it at that level. They've been fighting for millions of years on their home planet. A side group ended up crashed on Earth. That's where Optimus Prime, the Peter Cullen-voiced 18-wheeler truck, fights Megatron, the guy that turns into a gun, and they've been in a war. So some of the creatures are on Cybertron far away, and some of them are on Earth. And it's been a bit interesting. The one thing I wish they would do, and I'm kind of surprised they don't, is I'm an old head, and in old team books, they used to put little heads of who's on the team. And I would really love for the home because there's so few left on Earth, that I don't need a rundown of, but just who are the Earthbound ones? That would be useful. And that way on Cybertron, they can have millions of them. Yeah. That way they could kill off as many as they want. I'm a little bit, the robots have something called a spark, and they only die when that's extinguished. So it can be a little vague if a character's dead or not. I guess it's comics, it's fair, but I wish there was a bit more clarity sometimes. You're like, oh, is that guy dead, or can he just be put back together? Again, this is my ignorance of the lore of Transformers. So there's just a dizzying array of characters and sub-teams and all that. And if I contrast it with G.I. Joe, Joshua Williams, and make sure they use their names a lot. Like, hey, Scarlet, go here. Hey, Risk, go here. And it just helps reinforce, like, I don't know all these characters. I mean, I'm more familiar with their lore than Transformers by a lot. But by continuing to reuse their name and keeping the teams smaller, it's a lot easier for me to track who's going on. Because my other beef with the Transformers is in robot mode, they can look pretty similar in smaller panels. You know, you put three robots fighting in a 8-page panel page, you got to really know what those robots are. You know what I mean? It's so that was my concern with you, Phil, of picking this up, is that in the beginning it's clear, but as the series has gone on, they've just added so many characters. But I do know
Transformers. Like, I played with the toys when I was young. I watched the cartoon. I love that movie where Optimus dies. So I do know the Transformers.
Okay, then you might like Void Rivals too, because they pull from the movie a lot on that.
But I hated the live action Transformer movies.
Yeah, I couldn't watch those. But it's just like, oh, it's the aerial bots, and I don't know who's in the aerial bots, and like the sub team references lose me. And because there's a change, sometimes the robots change their appearance too, not just transform, but things happen to them, and so they look different than they did before. And it's a larger cast. Steve's always talked about it's good to keep, like Mask, the latest title, the only two issues out. They've been super smart. Good guy, Matt Tracker. Bad guy, Miles Mayhem. Miles added two people in the first issue. Matt Tracker added two people in the second issue. We have six principals. Like, that's a very manageable, I think, even if I'm vaguely aware of the cartoon, so I kind of knew. When I saw the names, I couldn't have guessed before. But once I see them, I'm like, oh, yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah. So having three good guys and three bad guys over two issues, way easier to keep track of what's going on. I mean, eventually they'll keep expanding the roster or whatever, but I don't know. It feels more manageable. But yeah, the G.I. Joe title has sort of pushed past. Last time I think I updated, it was the Dreadnoks. And I think the characterization of the G.I. Joe leader, Duke, is a little bit hard. He seems kind of a jerk and does stuff that doesn't make tactical sense to me. Like, instead of killing the bad guy, he really wanted to capture him and that sort of thing. Which, with military books, it is hard to come up with reasons not to kill the other dude. But, hey, man, that's the gig. When you sign up for that book, you got to make colorable reasons. And that whole thread sort of felt just not real. But now they're back off that. And they also have sub-teams and different groups. But I feel like he's done a good job of, as I said, using the characters' names and keeping the team smaller. But the Transformers is the one now where I like the book. It just sometimes I really get, man, we can't just have a list of who's on the Earth and who's... You know, well,
any opportunity to have like the floating heads in comic books, right? Like, it's the only medium where you can do that, and it works in a few different ways. You know what I mean? And one of them is to do your roll call for sure, like the old JLA JSA team ups. Yes. You know,
and I can be like, oh, here's the Earthbound good guys, Earthbound bad guys, and then if they want to keep a mystery, they just have the blacked out head with a question mark that they do some, you know, and there's like, and who's our mysterious play? Like, you can still, you don't have to give away the farm, but it just helps us slow people be like, wait, I thought that guy went back to Cybertron, or is he a good guy or a bad guy? Cause in robot form for me, they look often the same, but yeah, I'd be curious, Phil, if you jump in. And this, now we're into, you know, the late 20s and 30s for issue number. So
well, I thought it'd be
it's perfect. Quite a while
by now.
And I'm not really a Transformers guy. They hit a little late for me. The first couple of issues of the Transformers comic from Marvel came out right when I was sort of in my swan song, when I took my comic book sabbatical during high school. But I am a Dan Mora guy. I mean, why wouldn't I be, right? He's Capullo Light, basically. And his art looks great, especially with modern colors backlit on the iPad. Mora is
And
one of
he can
those.
get stuff out, like lots of stuff out if he needs
Well,
to.
he came on for 6 issues of Transformers, written by Kirkman from 25 to 30. And I read those, and I thought it was super fun, Andrew. And, there was a lot of characterization on Kirkman's side, status quo building and then shattering as he did at the end of the run when they did the split up where the some went back to Energon and some stayed on the planet and stuff. But you've got Optimus, you've got Megatron, and they're doing Optimus and Megatron type things. I thought it was a fun bunch of comics by Mora, and I'm gonna keep reading the next few until I end up, my attention wanders.
Oh, I'm not bailing. We're up to 34. I just would have loved like the rock because they do that page where they say who they show a bunch that stayed, and I didn't know all those characters. You know what I mean? On that,
Sure.
there's
I don't
this
know them at
page
all.
where it ends when they're leaving in the one. And so it was I would have liked, oh, little head things would have been perfect. I would have known who they all were. But I also want to say the last issue of the out of continuity one by Larry Hama, A Real American Hero. Last issue featured Laura Croft in the G.I. Joe comics.
Oh,
So that was a
cool.
fun at the end.
Like just a cameo, or is it setting up a
And
crossover?
it's setting up a crossover,
Okay.
but I really like that it wasn't leaked to me or anything. So I just got the issue and now they're going to do a second print with her on the cover. She's going to be featured in the next issue, but it was a nice sort of stealth crossover
And that could be
that they're
cool because
showing up.
maybe they'll G.I. Joe characters will be on like a Tomb Raider mission with her, kind of thing. Like,
Yeah, and they have the new, because they have a new, Hasbro is putting out a 6-inch Laura Croft, and they have, I think, some cartoons in development at Netflix and all that
There's a
stuff.
live
But
action at Prime, I think it is,
yeah,
coming out.
somewhere they have some. I mean, will it come out? Who knows? But I just thought, oh, it's fun when you just, part of the advantage, I guess, of me not reading previews or being online as much is it's just kind of a fun surprise to get to it and not be like, oh, yeah, I know that's out. I got to go get a copy because it's her first appearance at Image or whatever. I mean, I know she's had comics before. I don't know where they were, her first modern appearance or,
Yeah, I
all
forget
that
what
stuff that
company they were doing them.
all
I
the
think it might have been
flippers love.
Image.
Well, you know how
I could
people
be wrong, but.
like to scramble around and buy that stuff up like it's going to be the hottest thing when in a year from now no one's going to remember or care.
I
But
was never
it
a
was
Tomb
fun.
Raider fan, but I did like the newer games. They were fun.
Yeah, it was a fun. I watched some of the movies. They're fine, forgettable action movies of the sort that I'm like, yeah, it's fine. I couldn't answer a 10 question quiz about them after I watched them, but it's fine, Indiana Jones, but without the permanent, without the iconic nature.
Could have said Indiana Jones, but with boobs.
Yeah, I don't think they're that high quality. I would pass a quiz on Indiana, and I've seen those movies, most of them, at least twice, probably more. So I feel like Indiana Jones is a higher made quality product, Phil. Now the Laura
Not
Croft
the last couple.
movie fans will.
Not the last couple, Indiana Jones, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'm not queuing up that last one again. Although I think I saw it twice, I think, to give it a second chance.
Well, for me, a lot of the reason why I don't like the new Indiana Jones, a lot of it is just special effects ruins these movies for me because they had so much charm without the special effects,
Well, he's also so old, he can't
Or the
physically.
CG, I mean, the CG, not
He
special
can't
effects.
physically do the things that the character needs. And no knock on Harrison Ford, but he can't, some of the fight sequences just look bad because you're like, that's not, he can barely throw a believable looking punch. I guess he tore his something trying to use the whip or whatever. He's not able
Well,
to
I don't need him
do
to go
those
all
things.
action mode because he is old. Like, I'm not expecting that for sure.
But the movies always had, like, he gets in a fight, usually gets his butt kicked type of thing. Like, that's part of the fun of the, always some big muscly guy shows up and beats him up or whatever, or he cheats his way out of it, or, you know, that's the pulp end of it that was fun. And I guess if they went for a cerebral Indiana Jones, that would have made him more like his dad or something.
You can still do an adventure with an older Indiana Jones. It's just how you just have to write it that way. You know, it would be like Alan Quatermain, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, like he Sean Connery played his dad, that type of thing. But you'd want some sort of action by like a sidekick or something to get into some of the scrapes.
Oh, you know, there's a
physical
element. Bring back Short Round.
Yeah. Kwon Ki or whatever he's acting now.
Wasn't he a bad guy?
You can't have Short Round doing the fights now.
Yeah.
He'd get his ass kicked.
He was in that Everything Everywhere All at Once movie. He had some action scenes there. He's a good actor.
No, I like him, but I don't know. I can't see him being the action guy.
I'd see him a lot sooner than I see Harrison Ford throwing. Yeah.
That's okay. He can just do his Red Hulk stuff.
Oy. All right, I got another one for you. A series from Image Skybound, another Robert Kirkman book, written by Kirkman and fellow Scott Gimple, with art by Chris Burnham. It's a 14-issue series that ran from 2018 to 2020, and Burnham only agreed to do 8 issues, but they were having so much fun they went ahead and ended up doing another 6, and then left it that they are on a quote-unquote extended hiatus, and that someday they will return to this property. And it's called Die, Die, Die.
Oh, Andrew likes it. Or...
And they purposely did no solicitations, hype, or previews of the series. Not even upcoming covers. It just came out. When it came out with no fanfare and no hype on purpose. That's a odd way to drop a book on fandom. But the setup is that there's these twin brother assassin commando types that work for opposing high-ranking DOJ officials. One who's trying to do the right thing, and the other's a total sleazebag. And the one who's working for the sleazebag kills his brother, the good brother, and replaces him, so now he's pretending to be that brother working for the other official and getting all sorts of inside information and sending it back to the other official who, you know, they're opposed to each other. And then, to make matters more chaotic, there's an X factor of a third twin brother who works for no one. And he, like, lives remotely in isolation, and he's, like, the deadliest one, but he wants no part of this life, and he has rejected it years ago. So he ends up being the old gunslinger who has to, you know, put on his gun belt one more time and get drawn back into that world. It's bloody, gory, gross, action-packed storytelling. It's like Kirkman doing a Garth Ennis riff. Like, these characters are so degenerative that they're such degenerates, I should say. They would totally fit right in, like, in the Boys type world. But a really fun book, Die, 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 not to be confused with Die. The other book,
which is also good, I think so.
And there's another one, Die Loaded, I think, too, right, or something.
Yeah.
But this is Die, Die, Die.
Yeah, the Die Reloaded is coming out now. I think that's the third one. Maybe I've been buying that one. It's stacking up. I have not caught up on it, but one of those ones I keep buying and stack keeps growing. I'm like, I should probably read those at some point to see if I still want to keep buying it. But you know how you get sometimes, guys. Just keep buying them. Throw them on the stack. Just a quick note. I did, I talked about this on the old show. But the Comic Shop News did those Team America little segments. Well, they released it as a comic. So I went and bought it. That's Team fun. America Racing. So it's collecting all those segments that were in the news strip. And then a few, like, hey, here's a page of the script and here's some of the pencils and talking about the art team and all that. And it's a one and done. I don't know how much it is. I can't find the price on it and don't remember what I paid. But I guess it was a Kickstarter too. It just colored. I was quite pleased. I remember reading those segments and having a fun with it on the show. So when I saw the lot that they had collected, I'm like, well, I got to get the comic, you know, because those the newsprint on that Comic Shop News, I don't think that's going to last forever, boys, although it is oversized. But yeah, it's neat to see all the different, you know, biographies of all the characters. I think all this stuff might have been in each Comic Shop News. I don't really retain them, so I don't know. But yeah, Team America Racing. So you can learn all about, because it started with the toys and then Marvel Comics had it and all that. Again, they're not, no current ongoing book or anything, just the one shot.
A few different Albany shows ago, the Albany Comic Con that they have, my friend Ron Mars was there, writer Ron Mars, and he had a book on his table that looked familiar as far as the character, but I don't know what this book was. Big honking, almost 200-page hardcover. I start flipping through it, and I'm like, what the heck is this, Ron? And he tells me this was a 2025 Zoop crowdfunding campaign created book from Blue Creek Creative, priced at $40. It was called Stardust, the Super Wizard Anthology.
You know, I still haven't taken the Zoop jump yet, Steve. Done a lot of Kickstarter, a few Indiegogos, but I haven't been there in a while.
Yeah,
I still haven't done the Zoop thing this yet. One, I should.
I didn't know anything about this book other than just seeing it on his table. So I bought it from him. There are Big Cartel has some copies still available, signed by Mike Allred, that are out there, to give a little spoiler of some of the types of creators who are involved here. This is edited by Van Jensen, who also writes the framing sequence. There's a framing sequence that's like revisited several times between the anthology stories so that there's kind of an oral, like an overall narrative to the whole book, which is kind of fun. But this is Stardust, that crazy Fletcher Hanks character from the Golden Age. It was got, you know, a completely inconsistent power set, right? And he's got a tendency to lethally off his foes in crazy ways. Look up, Google this Stardust off in characters in crazy ways, and you'll see some very creative ones. But involved in this anthology were the likes of Mark Andraco, Scott Morse, Shaky Kane, Jeffrey Allen Love, Jeff Parker, Tom Fowler, Ron Mars, no surprise since I bought it off his table, Mike Allred that I mentioned before, Xander Cannon, Francisco Francavilla, a lot of weird...
Well,
some
cast.
Of, you know, some yeah. of it's rubbish, right? As George Harrison would describe, you know, some of the old Beatles work. Oh, some of it was rubbish. You know, it's an anthology, and it's a big honking one of indie creators, so some of it's not so great, but you just flip through that stuff and get to the next bit. And it's just very interesting. I almost describe it like as being like pushed and pulled in various directions of the different styles of indie artwork here. And with this crazy character, fun stuff, Stardust weirdness.
Yeah. One of the YouTube channels sometimes covers crazy Golden Age, and Fletcher Hanks was one of the ones that he talked about a little bit, with all the even more crazy there than your average Golden Age book.
For sure.
All right, I think, well, Phil, Steve, you got any final ones you want to send us out on?
Nope.
I got a good trailing recommendation quickie here. It's the three volumes of Neil Gaiman's Norse mythology from Dark Horse that collect 5 or 6 issues each of the 3 volumes that existed of the Norse mythology series that was Gaiman and P. Craig Russell handling the adaptation side of it. And the artists included are like Mike Mignola, David Rubin, Peter Kowalski, Jerry Ordway, Jill Thompson, Mark Buckingham, Colleen Duran. It's a really good anthology series, and Gaiman knows how to weave a story. And he got into Norse mythology the way we all did, reading Thor comics, you know? So it's fun because he comes at it from the same side of appreciation, and his characterization of the Norse, you know, gods and pantheon are everything from extreme to really charming. It's fun stuff.
I remember in The Sandman when he has them show up for the vying for the key to hell, I think, or whatever. Yep. He has Thor and Loki and those characters. I actually remember reading about Norse mythology, I think, prior to Marvel. It was one of those few things you could get in the library before they had comics. They had the, because there's only a few like written sources, and the Eddas, I think, are the two main, like the what's left of that time, and those were all written well after the fact. So yeah, it's like Norse mythology. It's a crazy business in there. And the inconsistencies, I think, were what I liked. You know, the sort of Rashomon effect of, they weren't really, it was written a bunch of different ways, so they just picked the one they liked the most. All right, guys, that's another episode of Indie Comic Book Noise.
The other show.
Just goofed up. The other show. So we'll have this on, and yeah, we're launching into brave new worlds together.
All right, thanks for listening. Later.